Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. Today, we are going to be tackling a really big one. This is New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. v. Bruin. And this is a case that's been in the news a lot lately, and it's really kind of shaken things up in the world of Second Amendment law.
Yeah, it's arguably the biggest Second Amendment ruling we've seen since District of Columbia v. Heller back in 2008.
Right. And, you know, it would be easy to sort of just gloss over this and say, oh, you know, this is just about concealed carry permits. But it goes so much deeper than that.
It really does. This case is about way more than just a couple of New Yorkers wanting to carry guns outside their homes. It gets to the core of how we interpret the Second Amendment in the 21st century.
So to set the stage a little bit, can you give us a quick rundown of what actually happened in Bruin? Who were these guys and what were they trying to do?
Sure. So we're talking about Robert Nash and Brandon Koch, and they applied for concealed carry licenses in New York, but they were denied.
And why were they denied?
Because they couldn't prove they faced some kind of special or unique danger, you know, more than the average person. And that's where the case really gets interesting, because New York's law at the time basically said, look, you have a right to have a gun at home, but to carry one outside, you need to show a good reason.
So it was a pretty strict standard.
Very strict. And that's what Nash and Koch challenged. They argued that this restriction violated their Second Amendment rights.
And the Supreme Court ultimately agreed with them.
They did. In a 6-3 decision, the court struck down New York's law and said that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to carry a handgun outside the home for self-defense.
Wow. That's a pretty significant ruling. And it seems like the majority opinion in Bruin really emphasized this idea that the right to bear arms should not be treated as a second class.
Right. Exactly. The court said that the Second Amendment deserves just as much protection as any other fundamental right. And they were very critical of this idea that states can place all sorts of burdens on people who want to exercise their Second Amendment rights.
Okay, but how does the court justify that stance? Surely there's a balance to be struck between individual rights and public safety.
Right, and that's where the historical analysis comes in. Bruin introduces this new way of evaluating gun laws, and it's actually pretty controversial.
Controversial how?
Well, the court basically said that judges now have to become historians. They have to look back at regulations from the 1700s and 1800s to see if a modern gun law has any historical analog.
Hold on. So are we saying that laws written centuries ago in a vastly different society should dictate how we regulate firearms today? It seems a bit like using, you know, an 18th century map to navigate a modern city.
It's a really interesting question, and it's one that the dissenting justices in Bruin brought up as well. They argued that this historical approach is just too rigid. It ignores the realities of modern gun violence and the fact that we have, you know, vastly different technology and social conditions today.
I can see their point. If we're only allowed to have gun laws that existed in the 1700s, wouldn't that potentially invalidate a lot of modern gun control measures?
It could, and that's why Bruin is so controversial. It's created this massive legal uncertainty, and lower courts are already struggling with how to apply this new historical test.
This is already so much to process, and we've only just started scratching the surface.
I know, right? And we haven't even gotten to the issue of sensitive places yet.
Sensitive places? What are those?
Well, the Bruin decision acknowledges that governments can restrict guns in certain locations, but it doesn't actually define what a sensitive place is.
So the Supreme Court basically dropped this bombshell of a decision and then just left it to the lower courts to figure out the specifics.
Pretty much, yeah. And that lack of clarity has led to a real split in how different courts are interpreting Bruin.
Okay, well, this is definitely getting interesting.
Yeah.
So in our next segment, let's dive into these sensitive places and see what kind of legal mayhem is happening out there.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right, so we're back, and we've got this idea of sensitive places where guns can be restricted. But the Supreme Court didn't really give us a clear definition in Bruin. So what's happening out there in the lower courts?
Well, as you might imagine, it's a bit of a mess.
A mess how?
We're seeing a real split in how different courts are interpreting this sensitive places concept. Some courts are taking a very broad view and upholding restrictions in places like public parks, government buildings, even college campuses.
Really? College campuses? I mean, that seems pretty broad.
It does. And then you've got other courts taking a much narrower approach. They're striking down bans in places that you might think would be obvious sensitive places, like subways, polling places, even bars.
Wait, you're saying that in some parts of the country it might be legal to carry a gun into a bar, but not a public park? That seems kind of backwards.
It does, doesn't it? And that's what makes this whole thing so tricky. The Bruin decision has essentially created this legal gray area, and it's leaving a lot of people scratching their heads.
So this historical analog test, it seems incredibly subjective. Like, how do you even begin to compare a modern-day subway system to something that existed in the 1700s?
Right. And that's one of the big criticisms of Bruin critics argue that it's just not practical to try to find these perfect historical analogs for every single gun law. And they worry that this approach could lead to some really absurd outcomes.
Like what? Give me an example.
Well, some people have pointed out that good moral character requirements for gun ownership might now be considered constitutional based on Bruin's logic. Because, you know, back in colonial times, there were laws that required people to prove good character to vote.
So we could potentially see a return to those kinds of restrictions. I mean, that's pretty wild.
It's not impossible. And that's why Bruin has been so controversial. It raises all these really fundamental questions about how we interpret the Constitution, the balance between individual rights and public safety, the role of history in shaping modern law.
It's almost like the Supreme Court threw a grenade into the gun control debate and then just stepped back to watch the explosion.
Yeah, that's one way to put it. But it's important to remember that Bruin isn't the end of the story. There's still a lot of legal challenges working their way through the courts, and we're likely to see more clarification from the Supreme Court in the future.
Speaking of legal challenges, New York didn't exactly take Bruin lying down right. They passed a new law, the CCIA, trying to sort of tighten restrictions in response to the ruling.
Yeah, they did. New York lawmakers were not happy with the Bruin decision, and they quickly passed the Concealed Carry Improvement Act, or CCIA. And this law basically tried to do a few things.
Like what?
Well, first, it tried to define sensitive places more broadly. So they included things like Times Square, public transportation, hospitals, schools, government buildings, a whole bunch of places.
Okay, so basically they tried to close the loopholes that Bruin seemed to open up.
Exactly. And they also added some more stringent training requirements for concealed carry permits.
So they basically said, okay, you're going to carry a gun. You need to be really well trained.
Right. But even the CCIA has been facing legal challenges. Gun rights groups immediately sued, arguing that it was still too restrictive and violated the Second Amendment.
And what happened?
Well, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. So a lower court initially upheld most of the CCIA, but then in July 2024, the Supreme Court vacated that ruling and sent the case back down for reconsideration.
So basically they said, not so fast, we need to take another look at this.
Yeah, and that's a pretty strong signal that the Supreme Court is going to be keeping a close eye on how Bruin is being applied, and they're not afraid to step in if they think lower courts are getting it wrong.
So this legal saga is far from over.
Oh, yeah. This is just the beginning. Bruin has really shaken things up, and it's going to take a while for the dust to settle.
So what does this all mean for the future of gun control in America? I mean, is Bruin basically the death knell for may-issue licensing schemes?
Well, it certainly deals a major blow to those kinds of laws, may-issue. States like New York, where officials have a lot of discretion in granting concealed carry permits, are now going to face a much higher bar.
So we're likely to see more states move towards shall-issue systems, where if you meet the basic requirements, you pretty much automatically get a permit.
Yeah, that seems to be the direction things are heading. And that could have a significant impact on the number of people carrying guns in public.
Which raises a whole bunch of other questions about public safety, crime rates, the cultural divide over guns in America. I mean, this is a huge can of worms that Bruin has opened up.
It really is. And honestly, it's too early to say what the long-term consequences of this decision will be. But one thing is for sure, Bruin is a game changer, and it's going to be fascinating to see how it plays out in the years to come.
It's amazing to think that we're using 18th century history to shape 21st century gun laws. I mean, it really makes you wonder what the founding fathers would think about all this.
I know, right? It's like trying to have a conversation across centuries. And you have to wonder, were they even thinking about concealed carry when they wrote the Second Amendment?
It's a good question. Their world was so different. No mass shootings, no AR-15s. It's hard to imagine they could have foreseen what we're dealing with today.
Exactly. And that's a key point that the dissenting justices made in Bruin. They argued that this laser focus on history ignores the very real, very modern problem of gun violence.
Didn't they also raise concerns about how courts are supposed to actually apply this historical test?
Yeah.
Like, how do you find a perfect analogy from centuries ago for something like an assault weapons ban or a red flag law?
Yeah, they did. The dissent warned that this approach could lead to all sorts of inconsistencies and confusion. Different courts could reach totally different conclusions based on their interpretation of history.
And it seems like that's already happening. We're seeing some courts uphold gun restrictions,
yeah,
while others strike them down. And it all seems to hinge on this fuzzy notion of sensitive places.
It's a real mess, and the lack of clarity from the Supreme Court is making it even worse. Lawmakers are struggling to craft effective gun control policies, and law enforcement is left trying to enforce a patchwork of laws that seems to change every day.
So where do we go from here? Is there any way to reconcile this historical focus of Bruin with the very real need to address gun violence in the 21st century?
That's the million-dollar question. And honestly, I don't have a good answer. I think Bruin has created more questions than it's answered.
So it's not just a legal case. It's a cultural and political flashpoint.
Yeah.
It's about how we balance individual rights with public safety, how we interpret the Constitution, how we even define freedom in the modern world.
Exactly. Bruin is a symptom of a much deeper divide in our society, a divide that runs right through the heart of the gun control debate.
And that divide isn't going away anytime soon. So I guess we'll just have to wait and see how this all plays out.
Yeah, it's going to be a bumpy ride. But one thing is for sure, Bruin has changed the game. And it's a case that's going to be debated and litigated for years to come.
Well, folks, that's about all the time we have for today's deep dive into New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, Inc. v. Bruin. We've covered a lot of ground, from the historical roots of the Second Amendment to the very latest legal challenges.
It's been a fascinating discussion, and I hope our listeners have gained a deeper understanding of this incredibly complex issue.
As always, we leave you with more to ponder. What does Bruin mean for the future of gun control in America? Does it strike the right balance between individual rights and public safety? And what role do WE want history to play in shaping the future of this debate? Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and keep diving deeper.